keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. I'm really happy to be back with you, and I'm happy that everybody's listening to us again. Monday, crazy show. Lots of stuff going on over the weekend with the terror attack in Orlando and all the fallout, you know, the predictable reactionary fallout that always goes on after these kind of terrorist attacks, whether it's in Paris or Brussels or 9/11 or here in Orlando. I mean, you know, things like this are going to happen, and they're going to keep happening, and we're going to talk about why they're going to keep happening. And, you know, we talked pretty in depth on Monday about, you know, why we keep letting these terrorists win as well, because of the way we react, because, you know, the terrorist attacks aren't done for no reason. They do it to cause a certain reaction. And guess what? The way that we've been reacting to this stuff by, you know, condemning Islam as an entire religion, or condemning Arabic people or Middle Eastern looking people as an entire race or ethnicity, you know, these kind of reactions, this is exactly what they want, you know. And so we talked about that on Monday. So today we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, why this attack happened and why these kind of attacks are going to continue happening unless something is done. And the government actually has the power to stop these attacks from happening, but not in the way that they're telling us, you know, by banning guns or bombing ISIS. This is not how we fix this problem. We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. I've got a great panel that's on the call right now. I've got my hopefully DB is going to be calling in a little bit, but we've got the amazing journalist Claire Bernish on the line. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Hanging in there. Just, you know, wading through all the crazy reactionary emotional stuff going on following this attack, which, as I mentioned, is kind of predictable, and we deal with it every time. And, you know, you're no stranger to the controversy when we kind of call it out for what it is. You know, we get a lot of pushback. I wanted to give you a chance to talk briefly about, you know, some of the stuff that you've dealt with in the past, because you wrote that huge article following the Paris attacks that was kind of like, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, but, you know, we're calling it out for what it is. It's like, you know what, why do you guys all of a sudden care about people dying in Paris when, first of all, Americans in general don't give a shit about the French people. In fact, they openly kind of hold contempt for them. But on the other hand, it's like, where's the disconnect here, where there's like a bunch of other people dying? And we mentioned this in the last show too, like, thousands of people dying right now in the Mediterranean trying to get out of these countries that were engaged with militarily, like Libya and stuff. People are dying by the
dozens, like, daily. And no one really cares about that. You know, Claire, what do you make of this disconnect, and, you know, why some people dying matter and why other people dying don't? And, you know, even more specifically with, like, the whole gorilla thing that just happened a week or two ago. It's like everyone's, like, freaking out about this gorilla and stuff, but then on the other hand, there's, like, a bunch of other, you know, a bunch of other animals getting slaughtered around the world, not to mention, like, our own factory farming system that kills, like, millions, if not billions of animals every year. You know, like, where does this disconnect come from, Claire?
There are actual, like, documented psychological reasons why there are enormous disconnects in the ability to sympathize or empathize with victims or situations, tragedies, whatever. I mean, when it comes to something like Orlando, you know, a lot of people can immediately sympathize or empathize with what has happened to the victims and how tragic, you know, justifiably how tragic this really is for both the, you know, the families, friends, and victims, and also kind of society at large and how telling it is. But the disconnect comes, the reason people in the West can sympathize with, like, Paris or Brussels or Orlando or San Bernardino or, you know, what have you, over refugees drowning in the Mediterranean or people, you know, vast swaths of innocent civilians being killed by drone strikes or bombings in Syria, it's a matter of relatability. If you are familiar with the victims, if they seem more like your own situation, if they're more familiar to you, then you have a greater ability to empathize. I mean, there's an actual psychological basis for that. It doesn't make people it's not a condemnation of people who can't understand. It's just a psychological basis. We have to move beyond that, though. We have to understand that every person who dies, who's innocent, who should not die, has value, and there is a meaning in that. And it's difficult to make the connection when it might be a cultural difference or a societal difference that we don't understand, but it's necessary that we start doing that.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, and I think a lot of it comes from just, like, media programming, cultural programming, because ever since 9/11, I mean, there's been a relentless dehumanization of Muslims and Middle right. Eastern people, you know, for, you know, just constantly going on since 9/11. I mean, this has been going on now, what, over
15 years?
Like 15 years, basically, where it's like over and over, it's like Muslims are the problem, Muslims are the enemy, we need to bomb them. And, you know, it makes sense because the government wants to be able to get away with indiscriminately bombing countries, or, for instance, like the war on terror has been estimated to have cost anywhere between 1 and 5 million lives so far in the Middle East. There's no really telling how many exactly, but, you know, you don't hear anything about these million people that are dead. I mean, a million people, that's a lot. I mean, 50 people in Orlando is a tragedy, but a million people, that's a massacre. But it's really not a big deal to anybody, at least outside of, like, activism circles and people who are, like, anti-war and stuff. It's not a big deal because those people have been dehumanized. And now it's going on again with Trump. And, you know, to me, it just makes it's kind of in a really dark way. It's kind of funny to see how the media is freaking out about how Trump makes these remarks about Muslims. Just today or yesterday, he said that we may have to go look at mosques and spy on mosques to find, you know, to stop terrorism. And the media kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe Trump says that. Well, the thing the media doesn't tell you is that the government's been doing that. They've been spying on mosques. The FBI has been doing that for a long time, since 9/11. It's already been going on. The media didn't bother covering that while it was happening really very much. But now that Trump is saying it, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe Trump is saying this stuff. It's like, yeah, well, the same media that's now freaking out about Trump saying it either didn't bother covering it as it went on from the Bush administration through the Obama administration and currently, you know, it's still going on. They didn't give a shit then. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh my God. I mean, literally what's going on here, and we touched on this briefly last show, is that Trump is saying what they've been trying to program us into thinking since 9/11, and that's why it's resonating with all these people that unfortunately are extremely brainwashed and are extremely fearful because they watch too much damn TV. They're afraid of all these other people besides Americans because that's how they've been programmed to react. That's how they've been programmed to think, and the media and the government has been doing that hand in hand for the past 15 years, and all of a sudden Trump comes along and says exactly what they've been subtly telling us for 15 years, and everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe Trump is going to do this. I can't believe they're going to patrol minority neighborhoods. It's like, wait, we already have a huge problem where minorities are already being over-patrolled by the cops and gunned down by the cops. And because Trump and Ted Cruz say, oh, maybe we should have patrols going through Muslim neighborhoods, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe they said that. Well, dude, they're already doing it. And the only reason the media talks about it now is because all these people with cell phones get out there and like record the cops acting up and killing people and doing horrible things. All of a sudden people know about it. The media didn't give two shits about police killings 5 years ago. They didn't even talk about it. You know what I mean? And so it's just there's a huge disconnect with the media. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we're being actively programmed to care about some people and some things. And we're being programmed to not care about other things. And then, you know, just one example going on right now in the United States is this is exactly the stuff with the police violence, because, you know, the past two or three years, I mean, it's come to the forefront of the American psyche is like the issue of police violence. But over and over, we've seen the media kind of demonizing the victims here and kind of, you know, treating the cops with like giving cops like the white glove treatment.
You have to impart this. It's the idea of impunity. Like this, in order for the state to be effective, the state has to affect a divisive wedge. It has to put a difference between those who will quote unquote morally follow the law, because they have to propose the law as this moral entity. Even if laws are immoral, in order for the state to be effective in its power, it has to propose that the law is a moral entity, and people will line up behind that because they feel like following the law makes them a good person. So you have this whole segment of the populace that believes that if they follow the law, no matter what, they're doing the right thing. I mean, think about what that is. Like, if you follow the law, you're doing the right thing. If you turn in your neighbor for not doing the right thing, then you are doing the right thing. I mean, this is a very insidious program of intense propaganda, and it's always been the truth, but it's been incredibly increased since 9/11, and it's getting worse and worse all the time. And it's the same way, like you were talking about with the Middle East, with propaganda, with wars and everything like that. I mean, you have to have that divisive wedge. If you don't have that wedge where you subtly impart this idea of moralism behind either side and immoralism on the other side, if you don't have that, people aren't as willing to line up behind it. But you can't just come out and say, hey, you're a bad person if you don't do this. You have to do it subtly through propaganda, and that's what they've done through the media, the corporate mouthpiece. I mean, that's how they do it, and it's incredibly effective, and you see it after tragedies like this. You see it every single time in the way that people line up and fight amongst each other, and it's really sad and tragic that people fall for this every single time, but it's effective propaganda, and this is evidence of that.
Exactly. And, you know, this tactic was shown blatantly and how well it worked with the Mike Brown shooting. And, you know, there was a good amount of people that were very upset about the Mike Brown shooting, but there was plenty of people. And I don't know, I would say they probably outnumbered the people who were upset about the shooting who were justifying it and said, well, you shouldn't have stolen that cigar from the liquor store if you didn't want to die, you know. And, you know, these are the same people that supposedly value the Constitution and stuff. And, you know, this whole idea about due process, well, that's part of the Constitution. It's part of the Bill of Rights, or, you know, it's in there somewhere. And it's supposed to be something that people are guaranteed. You're not supposed to just be executed in the streets for stealing a cigar. You know, and the same people that preach about the Constitution and the rights are the same people saying, well, if you didn't want to die, you shouldn't have stolen the cigar. You know, and the effective demonization of a certain community in the United States, the black and other minority communities, is very effective, to the point where cops can like literally gun people down and there could be video of it. And people are just, you know, they're like, well, he shouldn't have done what he did. You know, if he didn't want to die, he shouldn't have done something that may have been bad, even though he didn't get a trial. never was convicted.
That's the moralization of law. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like any minor infraction, like stealing a cigar from a store, can become this moral imperative to a segment of the population. If it seems like a moral wrong to these people, they will line up against the person, even to the point where it's justifiable for them to have been killed by the police. That is incredibly effective propaganda right there.
Yeah.
I mean, frighteningly so.
And it worked.
It was a movie this year called Experimenter, and Claire, it kind of goes along with what you were saying about kind of the psychology behind it. The psychologist Stanley Milligram, he spent years in the 60s studying how people would conform to they would basically accept torture and on another human as long as they were slightly removed from it and as long as there was an authoritative body that was ultimately taking responsibility for it. And we see that kind of, I think, on a daily basis. But yeah, you check out the movie Experimenter. It's about Stanley Milligram, and it goes really to the heart of this, I think.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Jake Anderson, welcome to the call. Very interesting perspective there. I'm going to bring Manny Aguilar into the conversation now, our resident activist. What's up, Manny?
What's up, Nick? What's up, Jay? What's up, Claire and everything? Shout out to the Mocha sister, Lily, also.
Manny.
Basically, the disconnect, it comes when Northern Americans are basically into their culture, you know, and I want to make sure I say Northern Americans because I don't want you to confuse us with Americans from Mexico, okay? You know, Northern Americans, they have this war in culture where they start getting brainwashed that they're better than everybody in the whole world. And when you have that syndrome that you're better than everybody, you know, anything else that happens, you disconnect from it unless maybe they look closer to what you look like or you know, or they kind of maybe similar to what you do, then maybe you can connect a little bit and stuff like that, you know. But it's just, but unfortunately, you know, it just, you know, we're being brainwashed here in the United States, you know. It's so much to like a religion, you know, religion is really, really a big factor, stuff like that. You know, I did a story a long time ago on Scientology, you know, where all these people are programmed. Unfortunately, you know, I lost a lot of friends because they have to disconnect. If they belong to Scientology and you don't, they have to disconnect, you know, and that's including Tom Cruise, you know, and it's kind of sad, you know. And so it's just, you can't be cold-blooded like that, you know, you have to kind of care and stuff like that. But unfortunately, our government brainwashes you, do not care about anybody. And also, we're over-medicated in this country. Too much shit going on. It's just over-medicated. So I also want to send a shout-out to the families that have lost their fathers or mothers. A lot of these teachers talking about being disconnected, you know, we hardly ever talk about our border country, Mexico. We're losing teachers left and right and stuff like that just because they want to educate our kids and stuff like that. The government has no feeling for them as far as giving them any raises, and they definitely, a lot of them are so good at what they do is they're teaching people, you know, our kids in Mexico in some, you know, train, you know, basically inside of one of the train carts, you know, stuff like that, because the government does not want to build any schools in Mexico and stuff like that, and they don't want us to be educated down there because the less educated we are, the better for the government and stuff like that, you know, so. That's where we're at.
Interesting, man. Valuable insight there. And yeah, people are getting, you know, violence is consuming the world. As Claire covered recently on the anti-media, there's only 10 countries in the world that aren't actively engaged in some kind of conflict or some kind of war. 10 countries in the world. I mean, there's like almost 200 countries, I think, out there. I mean, so the world's already at war. We're going to talk a little bit more about some even more unnerving things going on with the Cold War 2.0 towards the end of the show. But first, I want to, while we're still on this initial topic here of Orlando, I want to touch on this. It's our top story of the day on the antimedia.org. And it's one of the people that is actually a survivor of the shooting. She was inside the bathroom when the guy was on the phone talking with the cops. And this is, you know, everyone is reporting on how the guy called the cops and pledged his support for ISIS. But the rest of the phone call is kind of suspiciously being suppressed. They're not letting anybody get a hold of the actual audio. But there's a witness that was recently part of a I don't know what you call it, a town hall or something, that was there, and her name is Patience Carter, 20-year-old from Philadelphia, that was at the club in Orlando. And this is kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning of the show on as far as why these terror attacks are not going to stop, no matter if Trump bans Muslims, if Hillary Clinton bans guns. This stuff isn't going to stop. And the reason being is this woman actually talked about the guy's motive. The Omar Mateen guy, whose family was from Afghanistan, he was a U.S. citizen born in the U.S. as well. Here's a quote from what she said. Everybody could hear it, who was in the bathroom, who survived, could hear him talking to 911, saying that the reason why he's doing this is because he wants America to stop bombing his country. And from that conversation, from 911, he pledged his allegiance to ISIS. I mean, that's literally the only excerpt I have to – I was going to play the clip here, but it's just not loud enough. You guys wouldn't be able to hear it. But the guy shot up the club. I mean, there's plenty of other reasons. Maybe there's a certain reason why he chose that club in particular. There's been reports coming out that this guy was kind of like gay but in the closet. Maybe he was just upset at his own sexuality. Maybe, you know, there's plenty of other things going on. Radicalization may come into play as well. We don't know all that for sure. But his self-proclaimed motive for the Orlando shooting was because the United States is bombing Afghanistan. None of that stuff has been talked about by any of the mainstream news. And I don't know, maybe this is why they're not releasing the audio clip, because they want people to believe that people just do terrorism because they hate our freedom or something like that. And we covered a story just I think yesterday, the day before as well, of a former CIA agent saying, like, basically kind of saying the same thing, is that the conversation is much different. It's much more complicated and yet still much simpler than many people would like to make it. When you bomb countries, people in those countries or people from those countries or people who share some kind of belief with those countries are going to be upset, unless you're strictly only bombing the bad guys, which is almost never the case. I mean, what was the statistic? 95% of our drone strikes hit civilians or are not hitting the people they're meant to hit. So this guy literally shot up the Orlando club, and we don't know why he picked that club in particular. I know there's other stories that he was a regular at the club. There's other stories that, you know, he had profiles on gay dating sites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who knows if he was actually gay or if he was just trying to do surveillance or whatever. You know, I don't know if that matters so much. What matters here, I think, is that we need to understand why terrorism happens. And so, you know, there's terror wherever we're going to go and like occupy a country like Iraq or Afghanistan or Libya or wherever we're going to go topple a government. There's going to be people in those countries, just like in the U.S. If Russia came here and occupied the United States, there'd be a lot of people that would be here and they'd be fighting, you know, they'd turn into guerrilla warfare. They'd be, you know, according to the Russians, they'd be terrorists. And so anytime we go to a country and overthrow their government or do these foreign policy actions, and the United States has the largest foreign policy footprint of any country in the world, you're going to create terrorism. You're going to create bad people that want to get revenge on us. And this shooting in Orlando, according to out of the shooter's own mouth, was blowback. It was revenge for the stuff that we've done to what he considers his country, because that's where his family came from. You know, and, you know, other reports that his dad was a Taliban sympathizer and stuff like that. But we've been talking about this on the anti-media for so long, about blowback and about how, like, if we're going to keep up this empire all around the world, we're asking for these terrorists to come and hit us because they're going to continue wanting revenge. And the more and more bombs that we drop on ISIS, the more bombs we drop in Syria and Iraq and Libya and Yemen and Somalia – in, you know, you name the other country in the Middle East that we're in right now, Pakistan. I mean, there was just a recent news about Pakistan too. we're gonna we keep we every drone strike, every bomb, every military action, we create another terrorist, or we create five terrorists, or we create 20 terrorists that eventually one day may be able to hit us where it hurts, or when there's a tourist over in Pakistan, or a tourist in Iran, or a tourist in, you know, North Africa and Morocco and Tunisia, in, you know, wherever. You know, we're asking for these kind of actions to happen if we keep on doing these foreign policy, you know, mistakes. And the big problem here is that Trump and Clinton both are already calling for more bombs against ISIS. And so literally, like, you know, our policies create these terrorists, and when they actually hit us and get revenge on us, we push more of the same policies that created the terrorists. And so it's a cycle that is not ever going to end. I mean, literally what we're ensuring here is a perpetual war on terror for the foreseeable future. I mean, our grandchildren, if the United States empire survives that long, our grandchildren are going to be fighting this war on terror. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is not a winnable war. I mean, it comes from occupation. It comes from us being in places where we really don't have business there. I mean, we have business, you know, oil business and actual, like, you know, resource business, but we don't have a moral reason to be there. I mean, we're not in Afghanistan trying to give them freedom. We're not in Afghanistan trying to give them democracy. I mean, our own democracy is not even sound. Our own democracy is called into question. I mean, that's, you know, everybody knows that. Everyone listening tonight knows that especially after the 2016 election, that this thing is, like, rigged in many ways. So this idea, this argument is completely just made up, that we're over there giving them freedom and democracy and stuff, because we don't even have that here, you know. And this to me is probably a huge story that's going to come out of this. I don't know. No one's really covering it, though, because they won't let the audio tapes out. We're having to rely on some witness that happened to be on video that put this out there. And luckily we came across the clip and we made an article about it. And, you know, fortunately it's gone really viral. But, you know, people need to see this. It's our own policies that are causing blowback, that are creating these terrorists. I mean, people are blaming it on Islam. People are blaming it on guns. I mean, those arguments are not valid. This guy didn't say – he didn't call up and say, you know what, I'm doing this because I love I love Allah, and Allah tells me to go shoot you guys up. He calls up and he says, you know what, I'm doing this because you're bombing the country where my family is from. That to me is just huge. What do you guys make of it? Yeah, go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it in terms of your description. You know, yeah, we do have business there. Unfortunately, it's a geopolitical business, and most of the neocons, like, if you gave Dick Cheney one of those truth-telling serums and sat him down, he'd probably say, you know, in his heart of hearts, he thinks we have to be doing this in order to, you know, make sure we, you know, control the resources and of the planet and whatnot. But you're right, it's not a moral reason. And if you look at the internal kind of toxic conditions of our own democracy, it's really hard to argue that we have a moral right to be doing any of that, as opposed to fixing our own problems, you know. And I think that, for me, that goes to the heart of it, is that we have so many unjust things going on here, that for us to be spending these trillions of dollars and divesting ourselves of any kind of moral justification while we have all these problems here, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, man, it's not an argument that's really logical. You know, it's just like they say this stuff and they want us to believe it, and unfortunately, a lot of people do. A lot of people buy this stuff, and they're like, that makes sense.
Well, it's like that experiment. Like, as long as people feel like an authoritative body is ultimately taking responsibility for it, you can tell them anything, and they'll allow the person on the other end of the experiment to receive the buzz, you know, to get the shock. You know they're in pain. I mean, we know that people are suffering because of what we're doing. But as long as there is an experimenter who's in a position of authority who says, no, this is what needs to happen, the law is the law, as long as we hear that, we
kind of cognitively can are okay, we're okay with it at that point, as long as someone says the law is the law.
Yeah, and I experienced that firsthand just recently, where I got, you know, intercepted by the DHS when I was trying to travel to Arizona, and that's what the guy told me. He's you know what, I'm gonna search your car, and I told him I don't consent, because, you know, I know my rights for the most part, and I told him I don't consent. He said, well, our canine unit says that you have something in your car, so, you know, you no longer have the right to refuse search. And, you know, like, I was visibly pretty upset about what went on, because, you know, who wants to have their shit gone through when you're just trying to travel, especially when it's late at night and you're tired and you're just trying to get to a place you're trying to go. And they come along, they're like, all right, yeah, we're going to dig through your car. We're going to put a dog inside of your car and let it, rummage through your stuff. We're going to unpack your luggage and, you know, we're going to make a mess out of your car, and then we're going to send you on your way as long as you don't have nothing. I mean, who's going to be like, yeah, awesome, man, thank you. No, I mean, I was visibly upset. Afterwards, the guy was trying to explain to me, you know, this is why I'm doing it. And I was just like, you know what, man, like, I don't care. And he's like, you know, we're trying to keep you guys safe from immigrants and from drug dealers. And I'm like, you know what, man, like, I'm not threatened by immigrants or drug dealers, you know. And he's like, well, ultimately, the law is the law, and you know, this was legal for me to do this. I didn't do anything illegal. I'm like, okay, man, if you're going to descend the argument to that, the law is the law, I mean, you don't have a moral argument, you know. And so
that's awesome, man. Did you really get down? Did you take him to task that much, really?
I did, man. I really did. Awesome.
Good for you.
I didn't. I mean, there wasn't much I could do. They pulled the canine unit out, and that's the loophole they have in the law. I mean, if they didn't have the canine unit, I probably could have got away and not been searched. But they had the canine, and that removes your rights. And so I was left with no option but to get out of my car and allow them to dig through my stuff. But yeah, dude, I mean, literally, these guys give themselves the authority because they just claim the authority for themselves. That's literally all it is. And the only thing that allows them to continue doing it is just people letting them do it. I mean, the only reason Bush was able to do the whole thing in Iraq was because there weren't enough people opposing him. I mean, there was like the biggest protest in U.S. history during, you know, to stop the war in Iraq, but that wasn't enough. You can't just have 1 million people out there in the streets on one day. When you got 300 million people in this country that are just – the other 299 million are sitting around just letting shit happen. You know what I mean? I mean, nothing's ever going to change as long as that status quo is there, and no one's going to stop it. I mean, Trump's coming into power. Everyone's saying he's the next Hitler and he's going to be a fascist. And how many protesters are out there opposing Trump? A couple thousand? I mean, it's nowhere near enough to actually stop the guy. You know, and it's just insane, man. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take for people in the United States to wake up and smell the coffee before it's too late. I mean, now, you know, Hillary Clinton is running on a campaign of removing your rights. I mean, that literally her campaign right now is centered upon removing the Second Amendment in many regards. And like, that's getting her more votes and somehow. And then Trump is running on removing the First Amendment. He wants to go in and spy on your religion. And he wants to send law enforcement into your neighborhood if you are of a certain religion or a certain race. And that's getting him support. I mean, the two top candidates running for office in the United States are running against the Constitution, and people are eating it up like it's candy. It's crazy.
It's almost a little bit worse because he has now actually jumped on board the banning of the Second Amendment in one aspect. And that is, if you are on the terror watch list, then you should also be banned from being able to purchase a gun, which, if anybody is familiar with the terror watch list and understands how not only secretive, covert, and pernicious that list is, but how unjustifiable a number of the names on that list are, then that is, I mean, that's worse in a lot of ways than just strict gun control, because it's kind of an arbitrary abolishment of rights.
Yeah, and it, you know, who's going to decide, you know, who's on that list? And you know, that's the problem there, is like, you know, who gets to say? Anybody can be a terrorist. Claire, I think, aren't you on that terrorist watch list now?
I'm pretty sure.
we joke about it, but you know, it
can
be
that's the thing. We joke about it, but at this point, like, the way that things are going, I mean, the enormous crackdown on dissent and on journalistic freedom and, you know, free speech and everything else, I mean, we have, and I mentioned this the other night, we joke about all of this stuff to a certain extent, and that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with being cynical and sarcastic. But at this point, the tone that has kind of enveloped the country, and with the way things are going, with what the two main candidates are touting, there needs to be an air of seriousness going on in this. I mean, people like Pastor Niemöller, who wrote the First They Came For poem, he really noted this very strongly. Like, he made sure that his original quote was not, it did not need to be repeated exactly, because it can apply to any society. It's like, first they come for whatever segment of the population.
First they come for the Muslims, and I wasn't
right, exactly.
And then they came for the Mexicans.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, it's going to get worse and worse, and we're joking, and, you know, we're laughing about it, and we're kind of cynical about it, but at the same time, like, this is a very serious matter, and if we don't start to take it somewhat seriously, then we're going to laugh ourselves right into the same sort of 1930s Germany that, you know, we know where that went. So
exactly.
It's not, like, I don't think everybody needs to be paranoid, but I think that there needs to be a degree of awareness and seriousness.
I agree. So, you know, I think we've touched on Orlando enough. I'm not sure how much more we can go into this. DB was trying to join us, but he's having technical issues. Not sure the cause of that. If anybody wants to call in, yeah, Trump banned DB from joining Anti-Media Radio. If anybody wants to call in and let us know what you're thinking on this whole Orlando scenario, we're about to move on to the next topic. The number to call in is 718-717-8296. We'll take your calls in the order that they come in. You know, Claire, on that topic that we were just talking about, censorship, kind of, I literally, 5 minutes ago, I'm sitting here and I was about to post the second meme for our show tonight, because I normally post two memes with the link to our show so that people can listen in. For, you know, the people that aren't regulars, we try to post like a catchy meme to get people, you know, to kind of go viral, and so that the link gets out there. Maybe people can like click on the link and they listen to us and then they come back the next week, whatever, you know, that's the strategy that we're using. But I went to go log in or I went to go post the second meme right now, and I find out I'm logged out of Facebook, and then I go to log in and it's like, oh, a piece of content that somebody posted on a page, and it wasn't even me, it's just a page that I'm an admin on, was removed. And now you have to log in, and then so basically I got a warning from Facebook that if you continue to post content like this, you could lose your account. And the page which posted the content, and which, by the way, was not offensive, it said, all it was a meme that said, good job, dumbass. Literally, that's all it said. The page that posted it had like
that's offensive to dumbasses.
Yeah, the page has like 2.5 the page has 2.5 million likes, and it just got unpublished. Facebook just unpublished the page.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
For that meme? What?
Yeah.
What's it in reference to? How's that? That's ridiculous.
It was reported as offensive, because in 2016 people are offended by everything, and that's the other thing. So Claire, yesterday we experienced some blatant censorship regarding your profile on Facebook. We had this great article up from with the video from Jimmy Fallon, because he's one of the few people in the mainstream media that actually put out a sensible argument or a sensible message regarding the Orlando shooting. And he's like, you know what, like, don't let fear get to us. We need to embrace each other. We need to stop, you know, stop being afraid of each other. We need to embrace our differences. Basically saying what we kind of harp on all the time here on the Anti-Media, where we don't need to be afraid of people just because they're slightly different than us. And that's what that's what Jimmy Fallon was saying yesterday, and it was a great article, and we posted it yesterday, and literally our page has about 1.7 million followers, and after an hour, normally you'd see about 80,000 to 100,000 people reach, which is still low in my opinion, but on average that's what we get. And this article from Claire had like 3,000 people reached. It had like 10 likes and 0 shares. And normally it would be in the hundreds and hundreds.
And it wasn't the only one either.
And it wasn't the only one. And then we realized, holy shit, everything else we were posting was doing regular, was, you know, average. And we realized, Claire, your profile was being censored yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. And the reason was, and like, I really don't know. And it would be impossible to really track down what actually happened. But an article that I wrote for Free Thought Project went really viral. And it also caused some problems. Their site came under DDoS really shortly after my article was published.
Which is basically
went viral anyway.
A type of hacker attack.
Right. And that's fine. I mean, that happens to sites all the time. Like, DDoS attacks are fairly common. But it was really shortly after that article was published. And then it went viral. And that was fine and good. And then my articles for Anti-Media came out. And like you said, I mean, like, nobody saw them. And it was really, I mean, it was beyond unusual. It was so blatant and obvious that it was being ghosted or suppressed or whatever. It's interesting. This is kind of what we're talking about with censorship. This is like the warfare. This is modern warfare of free thought. This is the modern warfare of the freedom of expression, ideas, and speech. And it is our most, in my opinion, this is our most valuable asset that we have, is the ability to communicate freely, the ability to get information as we choose, to make our own opinions based on you know, a wealth of information that we choose to look at. And when censorship is going on, when people don't see everything that they can, you know, when people get offended and be like, oh, well, I'm going to report that post or something, you know, what they don't realize is they are doing the government's job for it. They are participating in a fascistic government paradigm, and it is tragic, and it is really telling, and it is actually a little bit terrifying. I mean, censorship is about the worst possible thing that you can do to any person or idea, because it is the slipperiest of slopes, and we're already there. Like, you said the whole page got unpublished that you were talking about, like, with 2.5 million fans or whatever. This is dangerous. It's beyond just kind of a joke. Oh, look what I did. I got this page unpublished. It's beyond that. This is a very dangerous time that we're living in my opinion.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be Trump coming out and saying, you know what, we're banning what was it that he was trying to go against? Trump said he was gonna strengthen some kind of law. Defamation. I can't remember what the hell it was.
Oh, libel laws.
Trump said he was going to strengthen libel laws so that media outlets could be easily sued. You know, it doesn't have to be Hillary Clinton saying that we're going to ban non-politically correct speech. The biggest problem here, and the big thing, and it's very Orwellian, people, like you said, Claire, are doing the job of the government. They're being so offended by stupid shit that they're censoring their own brothers and sisters and their own, you know, peers. They're doing the job that the government wishes it could do. I mean, think of it. It's a crowdsourced, decentralized apparatus for censorship. It's brilliant.
Yeah, and the government couldn't be prouder right now. I'm telling you, this is the most amazing thing ever, because, like, in China, they have the Sesame Credit thing, where it's like this public credit score sort of system where everybody scores each other on how good a citizen they are. This is actually more effective than that, because this is peers doing it voluntarily to each other for literally almost no reason whatsoever. And the fact is, this is the internet. Like, you can scroll past something, you can go to a different page, you can unlike a page, you can block a person, you have the ability to turn off your computer. But you should not take away the right of anybody else to be able to view that content, no matter how offended you are. I am sorry. That is, there is no excuse for that.
Right on, Vanilla Sister.
Exactly. And you know what? I forget which story it was, but there was a kid recently that, like, told on his parents.
For running a red light or something.
Something stupid. Hold on. I can't. I'm trying to pull up the story, but there's... there's other examples. I got one from 2010. Parent arrested after fifth grader turns them in for having marijuana joints after being inspired by the DARE program. Yeah, this is an old one, but there was one that just recently happened. But I mean, this is right out of the book 1984, where the kids are kind of taught to snitch on their parents, and you know, everyone's snitching on each other. I mean, this is the wet dream of any authoritarian government, is to turn the people into their own, into snitches on their own neighbors and stuff like that.
Exactly. And I mean, if you see something, say something. This is not like, I mean, if you see something, say something is like a really kind of brilliant campaign in itself. But this is the outcrop of that. I mean, this is kind of the insidious cousin of that program, and it's terrifying.
It's kind of like the concept of Panopticon, which is a Foucauldian concept where you build a prison in a circular pattern so that the inmates perpetually feel like they're being watched, and so they start to self-regulate their behavior. So and the Panopticon becomes also a metaphor for in society. With ubiquitous surveillance, we start to police ourselves because we feel like we're perpetually being watched. And I think you start to see that concept in social medias now, where these kind of vigilante people who feel like they need to censor other people like you said, they're doing the government's job for them. We're a panopticonic society right now.
Exactly. And the NSA functions perfectly. I mean, the NSA is all reaching and all seeing. Even though they apparently can't stop terror attacks with people that are openly kind of showing the tendencies, and even though the FBI interviewed the guy like two or three times, they can't stop him. And keep in mind, in the Boston bombing as well, they had those guys, they had the older brother in custody several times to question him. And I think it was the Russians actually warned us about the guy. And so, you know, they couldn't even stop that, even though they interviewed the guy, yet they snoop on everybody's messaging and all of our phone calls, metadata and all that stuff.
But that's the point, though. It was never meant to catch terrorists. This program, this mass surveillance, was never, ever intended to catch these people who were going to do bad. The intent of mass surveillance, and it will never be stated, but the intent of this program is to spy on everybody because they can. I mean, that's the whole point. And I think people have kind of missed that. They say, well, you're not catching any terrorists. It's like, well, no shit. Of course you're not, because that was never the idea in the first place.
We are infinitely in more danger from our own government than we are from a terrorist. And that's just the cruel reality that people cannot understand, is that Nick, you might have posted something on Antimedia, that your chances of being killed by a terrorist. I think you did something about that.
We got a couple of them. I mean, you're 57 times more likely to be killed by a cop than by a terrorist in the United States.
But Claire is right, and I think that's a really good point, which is that this was a system that was set up for control and for – I mean, it's the perfect excuse. They ran planes into buildings, and they concoct these – whether they're letting them happen – they're coaxing people and feeding their anger and then giving them the weapons and letting them do it. However you want to call it, whatever words you want to use, they're actively using terror to keep us in a state of trauma so that they can enact these draconian measures upon us. That is the modern domestic terrorism that's taking place right now.
And it's because we're waging war on a concept.
Right.
I mean, how brilliant is that? When you wage war on the concept of something, of course everything is going to fall into place, you know, in line with that. I mean, if you're waging war on terror, what doesn't look like a terrorist or terrorism to you? What wouldn't make you want to turn in your neighbor or, you know, report a post or spy on people or think something is suspicious? If there's this pervasive and ultimate atmosphere of fear and what I would like to say, fear-annoia. I mean, when this is the pervading atmosphere in the country, of course everything is going to look suspicious and divisive and contentious, and everybody's going to start, you know, like calling each other out on things that aren't even true. I mean, this is, I don't know, this is like the ultimate propaganda campaign, in my
right.
opinion.
At the end of the Cold War, they're like, how do we keep this going? Bring Jean-Paul Sartre in here. Let's declare war on an existential universal paradigm of our freedom, our fear of freedom in an uncaring universe. Let's get Camus and Sartre in here, and we're going to launch a new terror campaign, and it's a war against terror.
One of the problems that people that take everything so offensive on Facebook, for instance, on censorship, is they get mad about somebody making a comment, you know, and that's where I think people should get their priorities straight, you know. Why don't you get mad about people being killed in other parts of the world? Why don't you get mad because animals are getting killed for no reason? Why don't you get mad for the real reason, not what, you know, you think it might be the real reasons and stuff like that, you know?
Absolutely, Manny. Yeah, those and Nick, you mentioned that earlier in the show about when people went ape shit over that ape, that monkey getting shot. And these same people are completely okay with just like institutionalized barbaric murder of hundreds of millions of animals every single day. But then they're gonna, you know, make a big deal over one monkey being shot. You know, it's just our priorities are so backwards. It's sickening.
And these are the same guys that are going and saying, you know what, we got to go kill that crocodile or alligator that just killed that kid over at Disneyland
right.
in
I was
Orlando.
Just thinking about that. Yeah.
So it's just complete hypocrisy, and it's just I literally don't know what to make of it.
It's by design, though. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, this is by design. We're so desensitized. Like you were saying before, we're desensitized, and we're meant to be divided amongst ourselves over these like really tiny issues, and we're meant to not see, you know, these vast swaths of people that are dying overseas. We're not meant to see them as people. We're meant to see them as statistics. And we're like the gorilla who was killed at the Cincinnati Zoo. It had a name, right? The animal had a name, so therefore it becomes more humanized to all of the rest of the people who see that animal shot. Whereas all of the animals that are killed in agriculture for food products or for whatever else, I mean, people don't understand what goes on because it's almost like incomprehensible to them.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I was under the impression that when people talked about refugees, there was like some sort of empathy involved, and it's like, oh my, that's so sad. These refugees are fleeing their, you know, they're fleeing a civil war, they're fleeing this bad situation. In 2016, refugees are seen as some kind of cockroaches or some kind of like horrible thing that need to be just exterminated. I mean, it's crazy when you look at some of the comments on some of these like right-wing sites or these, you know, InfoWars Facebook pages and stuff like that, or Breitbart or anything that the Drudge Report links to. You go and it's like, oh, the refugees need to be just nuked, and we need to turn the Middle East and North Africa into glass and let God sort out the, you know, the details and all. It's like, wait, where the hell did this come from? Refugees are supposed to be like dealt with because they're fleeing from a really messed up situation. And, you know, in 2016, I have a feeling why the refugees are being demonized, because they're coming from places where the United States created these problems. You know, and they're coming from Mexico, they're coming from Central America, they're coming from everywhere where the drug war is inflicting damage on societies. They're coming from Central America, where the United States has overthrown governments repeatedly. They're coming from Syria, they're coming from Libya, where we've trying to overthrow governments or have overthrown governments. They're coming from Iraq, where we overthrew the government. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, refugees are no longer something that we should care about. Now refugees are actually the problem, because we don't want you guys finding a personal connection to the U.S. foreign policy or U.S. intervention in all these countries. I mean, it's just so obvious and plain. But unfortunately, I don't know, 75% of the people in the country just don't even give a shit. They don't even bother looking any deeper. They say, oh, Trump said refugees are bad, so he's right. You know, and, you know, screw them.
It's brilliant. Bomb the country and then use the migrants to as an excuse to bomb the country again.
Yeah, I mean, such good propaganda, such good programming. And all these people, I swear, I see comments on our page all the time. Whenever we post anything like that criticizes Trump, it's like, oh, you guys are just like the mainstream media. You guys are just against Trump. It's like, no, dude. It's like, your problem is that you think Trump is saying the right shit because you've indulged way too much in mainstream media for much too long. Because anybody that thinks Trump is actually saying anything substantive that actually is going to make a difference, I'm sorry, but you've been a victim of propaganda, and you are definitely on the wrong track, and you've been distracted, or even worse, you're actively part of the problem,
which is
many times the case with Trump supporters. Moving on, we've got some other stuff to talk about here, because our only problem is not going on in the Middle East, and it's not only involving terrorism and other things like that. Iraq is like just going up in flames. Syria is in a horrible situation. But Claire, our most recent story of the day is regarding the Cold War 2.0. And Jake, you briefly brought up the Cold War, but you know what? There's a new Cold War brewing right now. And in fact, many people would argue that it's already started. It just hasn't been declared. But recent news, recent headlines coming out of like the South China Sea, where the United States has been kind of running their boats right up next to those islands that China has claimed. And then the U.S., Japan, and India are actively doing some kind of naval exercises right now, kind of just outside of China. And then the big news today was that there was some like Chinese spy ship that like entered Japanese waters and was like spying on this naval exercise. But the United States has been ratcheting up its kind of Cold War with Russia, and China's kind of part of it by default. But Claire, tell us a little bit about this, because this is something that a lot of people should be concerned about, but basically nobody is.
Yeah, so obviously, and a lot of people might know this, the U.S. has been building up its kind of bases and troops and unofficial reinforcements encircling Russia, basically. And now NATO is, of course, joining that and sort of being a vehicle for the U.S. and the U.K. to bring Russia in a lot of troops and armaments. In the meantime, the U.S. has admittedly begun to modernize not only its nuclear weapons, but its conventional weapons and artillery and such in a competitive race with Russia to see who can modernize most quickly. I mean, this is exactly like the Cold War. It's like an armament buildup, including the $1 trillion modernization of the nuclear stores that the U.S. has.
Claire, I just want to interrupt you for a second here, because I just want to point out some blatant hypocrisy before you continue. So Obama just signed this $1 trillion modernization of nuclear arms in the past like 1 or 2 years, I believe. And then he was just over in Japan. Everyone heard how Obama went to go visit. I think it was Hiroshima. And he literally gave some kind of statement where he's saying, we need to do away with nuclear weapons.
Right.
And then it was only a year or two ago where he signed a $1 trillion overhaul of U.S. nuclear weapons. Go ahead.
Right. And we were never really going to get rid of our nuclear warheads, and now we're just modernizing them. It's like kind of a euphemistic term for we want to be ready for nuclear war. And we are aggressively encircling Russia via NATO around the Russian border. And it's all kind of a Western and particularly U.S.-led aggressive policy in the name of defense. And Russia sees through it. And despite the fact that U.S. mainstream media and government says that, oh, it's Russian aggression, and it's Russian aggression, it's like, yeah, Russia might act aggressively on occasion, but really it's U.S. aggression on the Russian border. And we're playing with fire because both of us are modernizing nuclear weapons, and there's so much going on. It's just that we're distracted with this, what's going on in the Middle East, and we need to be paying absolute careful scrutiny on Russia and what NATO is doing, because we are provoking ourselves into World War III, which could have nuclear consequences, and I don't think anybody really is taking it seriously enough at this point.
Exactly, and that's what I was going to say. We're coming to the end of the show here, but you know, we're militarizing everywhere around Russia. You know, so we're in this kind of direct military standoff with Russia right now, and this is already Cold War 2.0. And then, you know, we have to bring up the TPP with our economic Great Wall around China. That's what the TPP is. It's an economic war against China. And then we're having this huge naval skirmishes with China constantly now. I mean, this is not a good scenario. The U.S. government and then the Russians and the Chinese are getting they're positioning themselves really closely to not only a Cold War, but World War III. Something to keep an eye on. Thank you all for tuning in. This is the Anti-Media Radio, 5 days a week, same place, same time.
Yo, here we go, going through the stereo.